On Radio EcoShock, you often hear me try to expand our view beyond humans to the many other marvelous creatures that live here on Earth. It's time to hear about one of them. Call them salamanders or call them newts, but in too many parts of the world, we have to call them endangered. Our guest has dedicated his life to saving the salamanders. Matt Ellerbeck works through public education, in schools, and through the media, and through his website at SaveTheSalamanders.com. Matt, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Now look, it's possible millions of people have never seen a live salamander. What do they look like and where do they live?
So salamanders sort of look like lizards, but they're not a type of lizard like most people think they are. They're actually amphibians like frogs and toads. So they're not lizards and they're not reptiles at all. And an easy way to tell a salamander apart from a lizard by looking at them is salamanders have moist-looking skin. They don't have scales on their bodies, and they don't have claws on their feet. So if you were out hiking and you seen a little lizard-like creature and you weren't sure if it was a salamander or a lizard, by just looking for the presence or lack of scales and claws, you can determine whether you're looking at a salamander or a lizard. And you just mentioned that most people haven't seen salamanders in the wild. And the reason that is because these animals are really secretive. They tend to live either in wetlands or ponds for aquatic species, which we generally call newts, or live in damp, moist, forested, or woodland areas. And within those areas, they're often found either underground or under natural debris like leaf litter, rocks, fallen logs, and things like that. So they're often hiding out of sight, and that's why most people don't tend to encounter them.
How small do these creatures get, and how big are the biggest ones?
Some of the smallest salamanders are, you know, only a few centimeters long, and then could easily fit in the palm of your hand. While they are very large species, especially the Chinese and Japanese giant salamanders, which can be between 4 and 5 feet long. And those are the largest amphibians in the world. So we have very large ones, and then we have very small ones. And then we kind of have species like, say, the tiger salamanders or mud puppies and things that are sort of intermediate, you know, up to a foot long, some of those ones. And those would be considered large in most salamander terms, but certainly there are species bigger. So within that scope, although most of them would be considered small, there's quite a lot of diversity there in terms of their size.
And those salamanders have a fantastic ability. If they lose a limb, they can regrow it. Do we know how they do it?
Scientists are still looking at that and trying to determine the exact mechanisms on how they do that. But as you just mentioned, you know, it's an incredible ability, and obviously it generates a lot of attention, especially in terms of medical research, because, you know, if we could figure out how a salamander does that, then maybe similar applications could be applied to humans one day and, you know, hopefully maybe treat really serious injuries like limb dismemberment and things like that. So it's obviously a very interesting sort of aspect of salamanders, their ability to heal themselves like that. And not just limbs. I've read reports about, you know, certain species, even if they lose maybe part of their bottom jaw or even an eyeball, regenerating those. They have an amazing ability to regenerate.
And Matt, where have you been looking for salamanders?
I've spent a lot of time across Ontario looking for salamanders, and we have about a dozen species within the province. I've also spent some time, though, in Tennessee, so in the southern Appalachia region, looking for salamanders. And the reason I headed to that spot in particular is that region has more salamander species than anywhere else in the world. So last spring, I set off to go down there, and one day I'd seen 50 salamanders. So it's the salamander hotspot of the world, which is really interesting because often when people think about reptiles or amphibians, they often think of the tropics or rainforests as being the hotspots for diversity. And certainly that is true of some of those types of animals, but for salamanders, it happens to be right here in North America. So it's nice that I kind of live within that region.
Now, if you had to rank the biggest threats to salamanders, what would they be?
I think the biggest one, and keeping in mind when I'm talking about these, that often these threats are interrelated and interconnected, but I think the big one would be habitat loss. And that's true of many species that are now designated as threatened or endangered. I mean, if you take an animal's home away from it, whether it's developmental construction or for agriculture or what have you, when natural areas are destroyed and animals have no place left to live, obviously their odds of survival are greatly compromised. What can also happen, though, is called habitat degradation. So say and a forest is cut down half of it and we put in a subdivision or some urban construction, and then the rest of the forest is left adjacent to that area. What can happen is contaminants like oils and pesticides and gasolines and other chemicals can enter the nearby remaining habitat. And because salamanders are amphibians, they're very, very prone to chemicals and contaminants in the environment, and their skin is very permeable. So they almost act like a sponge. They're very absorbent, and they absorb things in their environment. So those kind of contaminants can severely degrade their habitats, the remaining areas in which they have to live, and they can cause mass die-offs. They can cause low reproductive output. So the salamanders that are breeding, the young have a very low survival rate, and the ones that are born often have various mutations. So it's not just taking their habitat away, but sort of altering and degrading what's left. Also, pollution and climate change are a big problem for salamanders. Again, being amphibians, they like moist, cool environments generally, not hot and dry. And when we have climate change and you have areas that are getting hotter and drier, and certainly more so than previously, that can severely affect them as well. And then one of the last threats that salamanders face that most people might be surprised to hear is actually harvesting from the wild. So some are captured for the pet trade, while many others are actually caught for food markets. And I think when people hear this, it's easy to point fingers and be like, oh, that must happen in foreign countries, because obviously I do most of my outreach education, you know, in Ontario. I travel across Ontario. And when people hear that, they're like, oh, that doesn't happen here. But I've actually talked to conservation officers who work through the Ministry of Natural Resources, and, you know, mud puppy salamanders, which are an aquatic species found in rivers and lakes, have turned up in food markets in Toronto. So certainly with all the other threats that we talked about, you know, habitat loss, pollution, climate change, disease, degradation, we don't need, on top of all those things, animals being directly targeted and removed from the environment and then taken and used that way. And when we add all those threats up together, it accounts for a massive amount of salamanders being lost every year, primarily due to human-induced threats.
Looking through your website, I was also struck by the callous ability of humans to abuse salamanders. The one that touched me most was live salamander keychains. Tell us about that, please.
So this is something that has come to my attention via social networking, and I tend to see it quite a bit, which is horrific to see on the one hand, but at least more and more people are becoming aware of it. And the live salamanders are harvested primarily for tourist trades in parts of Asia, and it happens with other small animals too, unfortunately. And what they do is the salamanders are sealed in these plastic cases with a tiny bit of water and then sold as a keychain, where you have a tiny little salamander living in it. And unfortunately, you know, people might see this and be like, oh, isn't that neat, and become enthralled with it. But you have to kind of stop and think about, how did that animal end up there? And they become trapped in these tiny plastic enclosures where, unfortunately, they either slowly starve or suffocate and have no ability to give them proper care. So you can imagine how cool that is to just have something sealed up like that, where it's devoid of any sort of proper care and treatment and will just slowly die, so that people can sell them as these little trinkets. And I mean, if that was happening with puppies or something, there would be mass outrage and people would say, oh, that's ludicrous to even make that comparison. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, cute and cuddly, when we're talking about animal cruelty issues, you know, cute and cuddly animals seem to get a lot of attention, but certainly reptiles and amphibians are stigmatized as, you know, cold-blooded and slimy and ugly, and who cares about that? And I think that's why these sort of really extreme cases of animal cruelty would happen to a salamander, and, you know, people are quick to kind of slough it off. So that's why I think it's really important to bring attention to that. And with all that being said, salamanders are vertebrate animals, you know, just like a dog and a cat. And just like a dog and a cat, you know, they breathe air, they bleed blood, and they can feel pain. They have pain receptors, and they are fully capable of experiencing pain and suffering. So those of us who wouldn't want to see, you know, any other animals abused or subjected to cruelty, we should apply that same principle to salamanders and other forms of life as well. I don't think we should pick and choose. I think we should apply that compassion to all living things.
So what can we do to keep these intriguing creatures among us here on Earth?
That's a great question. And I've tried to make things really easy for people. So on my website, which you mentioned the link at the beginning, savethesalamanders.com, there's a How You Can Help page on there. So I don't want to just fill people with doom and gloom. I want to inspire people to get active and get involved. So there's a huge list on there for both individuals, things that people can do to help, or say if you're a landowner, you have a summer home or a cottage, or perhaps you live in a rural area and you have some land, there's great stewardship activities on there too, habitat management guidelines that people can do. So again, simple things that everyone has the ability to do that can make a positive impact for salamanders. So I really encourage people, visit SaveTheSalamanders.com, click on the How You Can Help page, and just take a minute to learn what you can do to help. And certainly, what we do good for salamanders is going to be good for other animals and the environment as a whole as well. So it really, you know, it benefits so many things.
We've been talking about one of the lesser known amphibians, the wonderful salamanders. Our guest is known as the Salamander Man. He's Matt Ellerbeck. Matt, I want to thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you very much, and thank you so much for having me.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock.